Welcome to Everyone Deserves Sunshine. I'm Diana.
And I'm Anusha. We're the girls in the crease. Okay, let me preface by saying I'm fighting a cold. My voice is going to be a little hoarse. Okay, I apologize. I'm trying my best. Can I just tell you how absolutely blown away I am by the number of listeners we have across the world? I am so honored also that we have so many Canadian listeners. I mean, this is a Canadian show about a Canadian sport, so it just makes me so happy.
And I checked this morning, and our Canadian listeners surpassed the listeners here in the U.S. And they're listening to us talk about it, what, like, warms my heart. And we have listeners from 33 different countries, which is kind of insane, right?
That's insane. Like, that's truly insane. 33 countries want to hear us talk. It's crazy. And I love it.
Well, like maybe like one person per country, but yes.
Yeah, let's just, exactly. I'm so grateful that Canada produced the show for us and saved Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's and all the holidays, all of them,
And potentially saved us all from demise?
Potentially that, Saved us all,
I know. You know what? We received so much feedback. Thank you to all of the listeners who are not only taking the time to listen, but to also send us feedback. This is totally new for us. We've never done this before, so we really appreciate it. We have never done this before. So we really do appreciate any feedback you have for us. Feel free to email us as well, and you can leave your comments on anywhere you listen to the podcast. I wanted to read two comments, Anusha. Listening to this podcast is like hanging out with good friends and talking about a TV show you like. I like that
one. That's exactly what we're aiming for. I love that.
That's the hope, right?
Yeah.
But the second one, which I think you're going to have something to say about this, is, and I quote, I was embarrassed by the Wawa tuna melt, but loved everything else. Your tuna melt was an entire debacle. I just, you like broke the internet that listens to us.
I know. I am so sorry. My God, I just feel like I need to address this whole Wawa tuna melt disaster. So I apologize, listeners. I apologize, friends. I'm going to try again. I'm going to do better. Please give me another chance. I am not going to embarrass you. I won't embarrass you too, Diana. I won't.
Wow, well, it's a little too late for that. But don't worry, listeners. As she said, I have taken it upon myself to make her a legitimate tuna melt. In fact, our friends are going to have an entire competition, and hopefully one of our tuna melts will melt your heart more than the Wawa one did.
That's a tall order, but I'm so into it. And I'm also very into the theme for our discussion today. So take it away, Diana.
All right. It's episode 3, and we're talking about the immigrant experience. I really wanted to do this episode on the immigrant experience because it has a character from Russia, and my background is Eastern European. I'm Soviet born. My family is from different parts of Eastern Europe. And, you know, when I watched the show and I saw this Russian character, I almost didn't want to watch it because of that.
I remember you said that.
Yeah. And because I kind of expected it to be like your stereotypical Russian character. But obviously, when I watched more of it, I really felt like I was watching some of my like childhood and some of my own experiences that I've had. So it's like a very deeply personal topic for me. And I hope that I can get through this episode without crying. So apologies. But that is what I've been doing a lot of these days. So,
yeah, we know you are now a crier.
Yeah. Okay.
This hits so, so close to home for me, too. I feel you on that as a fellow immigrant. And it's even more haunting to me because, honestly, of where we are in this moment in time in the United States. And what I love about Heated Rivalry is that the immigrant story is always present without it becoming sort of this, quote unquote, very special episode. You know what I mean? It just permeates through the entire series. They don't just mention it once for sort of lip service. So it feels so authentic and naturally unfolding. How old were you when you came to the U.S.?
I was 11. I was born in, like I said, the Soviet Union, but actually Uzbekistan. It's part of Central Asia, not actually Russia. I was born there, as I said, when it was the Soviet Union. So I consider myself Soviet born. How old were you when you came here?
I was 8 when I came to the States. So like a similar age as you. My dad was already in the U.S. and my mom and I were in Chennai, India. That's where I was living. And so we had this vague notion that we would be moving to the U.S. in the next year or so. But then We got a call in March and found out we had about 2 weeks to pack up all our whole lives and move. And not only that, we were going to be traveling with my uncle and staying with him. And my uncle, by the way, was going to get married in those 2 weeks to a woman he met maybe twice.
Wait, that, in India?
Yeah.
He was going to get married.
He was coming to India, getting married, and then bringing us all back. So then my uncle, his new wife, my mom, and I moved into his tiny apartment in Colorado. He decided to take us camping in Yellowstone. In March. I mean, I didn't even have a winter coat at that time. I think we got my winter coat as we were driving to the campsite.
Yeah. That's like a welcome to America.
Yeah. That was definitely. And I think my uncle wanted this to be his honeymoon surprise for his new wife. So picture this. We went from sharing this one bedroom apartment to a single tent because, of course, we didn't splurge for two tents. And then we set that tent up on a hill because none of us had ever camped before. Like this was a new experience. And so every morning we'd wake up miserable and cold and like a pile at the bottom of the tent because again, hill, March, Yellowstone. And then my aunt just completely refused to do it. And we checked in to an Econo Lodge. I still remember the hotel, like all of this in very vivid detail. So that's my coming to America story. It's not as glamorous as being the number one draft pick for the NHL, like Ilya. So a little different.
No, a little different. Not as glamorous, but you know, your own story. We all have our own stories, you know.
And by the way, it took me less than 2 months to have a full-on American accent. Less than 2 months.
I learned most of my English the summer after we came here by watching I Love Lucy and all these other old shows. I know. And like, it's funny because like some people will say I have an accent, but they never think I'm an immigrant. They're always like, oh, are you from like the Northeast? Like you have a Northeast accent. I honestly don't know. I definitely have a little bit of an accent with some words more than others, but you know, it is what it is.
For sure.
So, you know, it's interesting that you bring up belonging because I think that leads in quite nicely into talking about Ilya and this like him never quite belonging anywhere. You know, when I look at Ilya, and I'm just going to tell the listeners, like, I have such a soft spot for that man. I cannot even express
really?
To.
Yeah. I haven't noticed that at all about you.
No, yeah. I don't know. I've been very quiet about it, I think. But I just wanted to be very transparent on this show and, like, tell everyone that I just love him so much.
He's very lovable. He's an extremely lovable person. I'm with you.
He really is, really. But the funny thing is, he's not loved too much by Western audiences, especially not right away, not until later. And I think that's because, you know, he's very, at first, like very quickly portrayed as this like Russian tough guy, almost like a dangerous, you know, person, like a hot-headed, chaotic, right? And so this is very stereotypical about Russians in North America, and especially, you know, with hockey culture and everything. So I get it. He's living between these two worlds. He's recruited into a North American team. So it's a huge part of him, but like a bigger part of him is still very much Russian. And he's mentally in both places, like here in the US and in Moscow. So to me, like Ilya is the epitome of you never quite belong anywhere. And I felt like that on a very personal level for a very long time. When we first came here and, you know, we moved to the Northeast and Philly, there's a huge Russian community there and to this day. And I was very much ingrained in all of it. And when I say Russian, I mean Russian speaking. Mm-hmm. All of us are from different places, like the former Soviet Union, right? It's such a huge place, but the Russian language is primary.
Unifying.
It's just easier to say Russian. So I'm just using that like interchangeably in that respect.
I get it.
Growing up in that community, I definitely felt like I belonged in so many ways, right? I speak Russian, like we have the same culture and customs and everything. So it felt good. But I also had this other part of me that was like so much more progressive than so many of the people around me. And that's where I like kind of felt like I didn't belong fully, right? Like fully. And I, you know, I do wonder if anyone really belongs fully, but like I definitely had that like these are my people, this is my community, but like something in me is just not right. Like you just don't quite fit in, right? So I moved away from Northeast Philly into the suburbs, and then I became much more ingrained in like the American culture. I got more American friends. Like there weren't really many Russians up here back in the late 90s. And again, I belong here in terms of some of my values. right? Yeah. But I also miss this like whole Eastern European culture that I love so, mm-hmm. so very much. Mm-hmm. And so again, I'm like straddling these two worlds as an immigrant, and I could really see Ilya feeling the same way so often.
Mm, I completely get that. I do. Can I go back to one point you made earlier about how Ilya is perceived? Because you said a lot of people, they meet Ilya and they see this like stereotypical Russian, the way you characterize him, right? Right.
Right.
But I don't know if it's the acting or the way it's directed, but as a viewer, that's not how I perceived Ilya at all. But I clearly felt like in the show world, what you were saying was absolutely the lens with which people saw him. Mm-hmm. That stereotype, at least initially, right? As a viewer, though, it felt like you were seeing from the beginning this complex character who's just sort of navigating what you're describing, being of two worlds, being this fish out of water in a country he came to without any family or friends, right?
Right, absolutely. And with a language barrier on top, yep. of that.
On top of that. And I don't know if it was something from our immigrant background that immediately connected us with him. But yeah, I just thought what you said was so interesting because I can see how that was shown in the show. But as the viewer, it was clear that it was going to be a lot more nuanced.
I've definitely heard a lot of criticism about him being, quote unquote, you know, stereotypical cold Russian man who doesn't open himself up, you know, just mm-hmm. has all these like walls. But like when I look at him, all I see is just like this sadness in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like if you look at episode one during the draft, like the kid has been drafted as like number one pick, right? In the world.
Uh-huh.
And all his dad can say is he's lazy. Like he's lazy.
What? Yeah. And he says it to the owner, right? You could actually mm-hmm. hear the owner kind of like pause before he responds. And then you can kind of see Ilya's like, he has this sort of smile plastered on, but even that like sort of fake smile, that mm-hmm. falls. I remember mm-hmm. that scene.
Yeah, well, he's masking, right? We all do really great at masking. But the way that scene is shot is so great because we're always seeing just Ilya's face there. Like mm-hmm. his dad is off to the side. We only see the back of like the owner, right, of the Raiders. And so all you see is Ilya's face and emotions. You're right. He has like this fake smile mm-hmm. and he's like completely disassociating from this moment. Again, world famous athlete. He's the best. He's successful. He has everything. And yet he's constantly doing this outsider math. Like, when is he allowed to be himself? Clearly not in front of his dad, right? Not in front of this owner. So he has everything, but he's doing this math. And depending on who he's around, he needs to act a certain way, whether it's his American friends or teammates or so.
Yeah, absolutely.
The code switching, right? Like, how do I navigate this world where I live when the pressure is so high and like acceptance is so low?
Okay. I love what you said. I feel like it should be a quote or something. Maybe on it, like embroider it or something. I don't know how to embroider. If I did, I would. But
yeah,
pressure is high, acceptance is low. It's like he can never fully take a deep breath in or out, right? He's calculating mm-hmm. the risk of how much to reveal about himself, how replaceable he is.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, despite all of that, he's just so fearless, right? He could have had this easy marriage with Svetlana, as he mentioned in episode 6, mm-hmm. to get a pathway to, you know, residency and citizenship. But then Shane says, don't marry Svetlana. And he agrees. He agrees to that without any sort of guarantee. I mean, they had what? They're like 2 minutes into their established relationship at that
right.
point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he agrees, even though his residency status is so tenuous, it's so risky. He says, I cannot be anything close to gay because Russia.
Because Russia. I felt that in my bones, girl. Like, I felt that in my bones.
But despite all of that, he still wants to come to the cottage eventually. He wants to hold Shane's hand. He wants to show love for his boyfriend. And it's just beautiful and heartbreaking and poignant because you think, my God, this person, they just want to be themselves, you know? The show takes this unique experience. In this case, we're talking about the immigrant experience. And it just manages to relate to the audience in such a universal way.
Yeah, absolutely. The realness of it, it really hits home for me. And I actually read a piece in Vanity Fair by a Russian journalist, Michael Zagar. I hope I'm saying that right. He said that Ilya feels true to life for many queer Russians living under repression. Mm-hmm. And he said he knows people like Ilya and even sees himself in Ilya. He also mentioned that watching the show in today's Russia is like a mix of rebellion and hope. Moscow Times mentioned that the show's popular because of this like cultural familiarity. Mm. A Russian protagonist, abusive family dynamics, this forbidden thing that he has going on. Mm-hmm. Ilya's closeted struggle resonates with so many Russians because it mirrors their lived experience. Russians are using all sorts of VPNs, pirating software to watch the show because it's not allowed in the country, obviously.
I did see that.
Yeah, and it's like one of the highest rated shows on their own version of Rotten Tomatoes. Listen, I'm not saying a TV show is going to change how Russia approaches LGBTQ plus folks, but I do hope that at the very least, it's giving Russian people the hope that they need, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it's fleeting. I like to believe that, you know, people who are seeing it are finding it healing.
Maybe a TV show has the ability to change our lives. I mean, we're doing this podcast, right? It's changed by hope. They're watching this show. The show where they're not allowed to be what the show is portraying.
Mm-hmm.
The portrayal of Ilya in this nuanced way. I hope it makes someone see themselves in that way, in a place right. where they really need it.
There's also this thing with Shane, this cute little Canadian boy has no idea what Ilya is working with. Shane is growing up in Canada, very supportive, loving parents, a ton of friends, ton of opportunity. Whereas Ilya is growing up in Moscow, pressure's insane. We know his mom passed away. His dad is emotionally abusive, never good enough. His brother is an asshole. And so he tries to keep all that hidden. And on top of that, he's hiding this huge secret, being in love with Shane and the fact that he's bi. Actually, in episode one, at the very end, when they're on the rooftop and Shane's a little drunk, he's upset with Ilya because he's like, why can't you be down there and you know, be supportive for my win? In that moment, Ilya tells him, I go back to Russia in a couple of days. And Shane is like, well, that must be nice. And the look that Ilya has, I think it clicks for him that Shane is just too immature to understand exactly what Ilya has to deal with. And Ilya just stares into space. You could see his like jaw clenches. I mean, dude, Connor's story's acting is insane, but whatever. Like, you could feel every single emotion without having said a single word. He's very clearly thinking like, dude, this asshole has no idea what I have to deal with. To say like, must be nice that you're going back to Russia. Yeah.
Shane seems really oblivious in that moment. Really,
yeah, he has like no idea what it's like for Ilya. And the fact that this kid like hates his life in so many ways and he's forced to go back. Like, there's no other reality where he does not go back
right,
to Russia.
He doesn't have a choice because he loves Russia, but Russia doesn't love him back, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting sentiment, right? You can love any country you are from, even if it's super problematic, but still feel completely out of place. And that goes back to what we said about never quite belonging and like being between these two worlds.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, can I take a moment? This is perfect, actually, because we've been talking about Ilya this whole time, and I just want to take a second, or more than a second, probably, maybe, to talk about Shane here, because I just want to talk about the contrast between Shane and Ilya in this particular lens, from the immigrant lens.
Uh-huh.
I'll preface by saying Shane is mixed race. His mom is Japanese-Canadian, so there's still an immigrant element to his family story, of course. So Shane has this Asian heritage, but he's also generationally Canadian, right? And in our last episode about masculinity, we talked a lot about how we both felt their relationship was so equal, external to their personal and private relationship. But in this particular layer, in the immigrant layer, it's not the case. Absolutely not the case, right? Shane moves through his Canadian world with total ease, again, in this specific facet, right? But he has other things that, you know, make him uneasy, like being gay in professional hockey. I'm not saying he has nothing, but in this particular way, he has all the ease. But he's so unaware of how his fluency and the culture and the language and his citizenship and the kind of institutional protection he actually gets from the hockey world, from being on a Canadian team as a Canadian and the golden boy on top of everything else of hockey, right? Mm-hmm. He has all of the advantage and yeah, he earned it through his skill, but partly it's because he's at home. He's in his home. I think it's a significant way where this power dynamic is really slanted towards Shane. So you remember that scene where Ilya's watching Shane do his interview in French? He says, how does it feel to be perfect? But you do a bunch better than me, right? Mr. Perfect. And he's saying that because Shane's speaking French. And I'm like, hello, Ilya, you're bilingual too. I mean, he doesn't recognize the value of no. that. And he's bilingual. Shane's bilingualness, I guess, makes yeah. him Mr. Perfect. But Ilya's isn't valued in the same way because it's not the preferred language in the Western lens. And Ilya swallows that messaging whole. He doesn't recognize that.
Right. And you're so right. It's not the preferred language, even though you are bilingual and you also had to learn English. You would think that's impressive to people that he also knows two languages, but it's not. What I love about the show is how Connor's story and Jacob Tierney just take this language element so seriously and so respectfully. I mean, they hired a Russian dialect coach, right? So clearly Connor took it very seriously.
Yeah, it was impressive.
Because it's not just like his accent is hot. They're talking about language and how it informs power, specifically what it means to be an immigrant. So we know that Ilya is not fluent in English.
Yeah, well, Ilya might be reading The New Yorker by the end of episode 6.
I read The New Yorker now.
See, I'm objectifying your hot Russian accent. But anyway,
what else is new? What else is new? What else is new?
I know. Right. I'm okay. such a distraction. Sure. So go on. You were saying he's not fluent.
Right. So if you think about it, language is power, right? So when you are fluent in a language that someone else is not, you have the power, you have the upper hand. You also get to be complex in that language. You get nuance, right? So you get to be smart out loud. In your second language, you can feel reduced to the simple version of yourself, right? If you remember in episode 1 at that press conference where their journalist asks both Shane and Ilya that long, nuanced question, and you could just like tell Ilya's like, what are you talking about? Shane in that moment realizes for the first time how hard this must be for Ilya. Ilya in that moment doing that internal math. Listen to the words, translate the words, understand the words, respond, and most importantly, don't look stupid. Don't confirm any stereotypes in a public setting. And Shane is like, I'm going to help him out. He taps a little foot. He's like, I got you.
Well, he does. I love that. It was such a brilliant scene. I think it just goes to show, even though we're kind of saying Shane isn't getting it, but he's so inherently empathetic and sweet, right. You know, Shane.
He gets part of it. He gets the language barrier part. Yeah. And hey, points for Shane for that. So as soon as Shane's done speaking, Ilya, he's trying to be funny to everyone around. And so he basically is like, you know, what he said. And everyone laughs and it's all funny for everyone. But I know why he did that. It makes perfect sense. That's what immigrants do, right? They'll use their charm. They'll deflect. They'll like use body language to regain some semblance, some control of the situation because it doesn't feel good to not understand what someone is saying to you, especially in public when you're this elite athlete too, right? Side note, I saw this video of a woman. She was having a conversation with her friend and her friend made fun of a word she said in a thick accent, right? Basically, like you sound really funny when you say it that way. And the woman who said it, the non-native speaker, she says, in my language, in my native language, I am so smart. Everyone understands me. I have multiple degrees. I can speak in beautiful prose. I could write. Like everyone I know thinks I'm so intelligent. But when I speak English, everyone thinks I'm an idiot. And that's the thing that people don't understand about accents. Like accents do not mean less intelligent. They don't mean like I don't know enough. Like, accents mean I know more than one world. And when she said that, I felt it just like I felt it when like Ilya was very clearly uncomfortable, didn't know how to handle that question. And when Shane rescued him, this might be the time I might start crying.
I don't know. I'll right there with you because, you know, when I said I lost my accent in 2 months and some of it is because, I was a kid when I came here. But obviously, I got the message.
You must lose your accent.
Lose this accent. Otherwise, you're dumb, actually. You're less intelligent, like you said.
Yeah, you know, and listen,
that hit hard.
I often think about my mom, you know, and you know, we've been in this country for over 30 years, right? My mom speaks English really well, but obviously she carries an accent. And I know that to her, it's her deepest shame, which is like so freaking hard, right? Listen, she's the smartest person I know. She holds multiple degrees. She's a computer programmer. She's a history buff. But when she speaks in English, she feels like people think she's dumb. And that just gives her
because
like a huge
accent.
Complex. Yeah, because of the accent, because it might take her an extra 30 seconds to get a sentence out, right? And so I feel it so deeply in my soul. And so when I watch Ilya struggle, and when he says things like English is too hard right now, I'm like, let me hug you. Let me make you feel better. And it explains why he sometimes feels like a little like extra, because when you can't control language perfectly, you control your tone. You control your charisma, right? You control the room.
Yeah, you're using snark, you know, to cover up a vulnerability, right? We all do that.
Right, exactly.
I remember when I first came to the U.S. and I went to school in India in an English medium school, which basically means that everything was taught in English and not Tamil, which is the other language I speak. I just finished third grade in India when I came to the U.S. And when we enrolled in school for me, they wanted to hold me back because I was a little younger. And they also wanted me to be in ESL, you know, English as a second language. And I remember at 8 years old, I just felt so much shame about that. And you're going to be shocked, Diana, because I'm very competitive. Very competitive.
Are you? Oh, my God. I would never say that about you, like ever. Your entire wall of degrees doesn't.
Okay. So I was saying I'm very competitive, right, when it comes to grades and stuff, being on top of the class. And I just remember feeling so, so upset as this 8-year-old, like insulted to my core. And there's nothing wrong with learning English as a second language, right? Like you did at all. You know,
right.
I just sort of, I think, bristled at the assumption that I had to be held back. I mean, and the principal, to her credit, she wasn't being mean or rude. She thought, like, genuinely that this would help. And I just remember my mom having this conversation, talking about our moms. Oh, my gosh. Moms, immigrant stories, Ilya, Shane. I mean,
we can have an entire
mom
episode.
Like, being a sobbing mess. But, okay, so I remember my mom having this conversation with the principal and how I just felt was sort of the powerlessness of our position there as new immigrants, because, you know, as a child, you think of your parents as sort of infallible, right? They can fix it. They'll fix it. They'll fix everything. And I think at that moment, I saw firsthand as this child how being this new immigrant in this position, how fragile your parents are. Mm-hmm. Kind of as they try to assimilate into this new world, it's like you can see all of those vulnerabilities laid bare.
Right.
I think that developed, at least for me. I mean, I hope it developed for me a sense of empathy. Definitely made me more mature before my age. But God, it's so hard to watch your parents struggle, like you said, after 30 years for you and your mom about how she speaks and that self-consciousness. And me as an 8-year-old at that moment, seeing my mom figure out how to explain to the principal she didn't need to, you know, hold me back. And in India, this would have never stood. You know, she would never take that. She also is very competitive about my...
Well, you have to get it from somewhere.
My academics, right? But she was just so frozen in that moment. So anyway, I didn't get held back. I went back to the principal and I like brought her all these little certificates and awards and like prizes that I got up to third grade. And I like made my case to her. I like presented this. It was like a PowerPoint
presentation. 8 years old. Yeah.
Before there was PowerPoint.
Your power.
I did.
It's funny that you talk about being held or almost held back because I did get held back. I was in sixth grade back in the Soviet Union. But when we came here, because the school that I was going to did not have ESL services, they figured out the best way to bridge the gap is to just put me a grade lower. And they did that to both me and my brother, which was like not great.
No.
It's not a good feeling. I had really good grades just because I didn't have the language. I wasn't like smart enough to be in the grade that I'm supposed to be in. Mm-hmm. Felt like shit, you know.
Girl, I get you.
Yeah, exactly. Except I wasn't able to plead my case. I was just like, okay, I guess this is what I do, you know.
Because you actually had a language barrier. Okay, it's so interesting that both of these moments were just core memories for us.
Because also you're a kid, so like everything is so much more intense. No one likes to not fit in when they're a kid, and especially when you're an immigrant. You said something about code switching earlier. in this episode when we were talking about like accents, which again, relevant here.
Yeah.
And I think Ilya code switches a lot around language too, not just like actually speaking part, but the way like he uses his charm and sarcasm with his teammates. So like you can't be fluent enough to be authentic. So when you wear this armor, when you're funny and sarcastic and playful, and Ilya does this really, really well, he uses his charm for interviews, banter, there, right? But when it comes to his emotions, his true deep, deep emotions, his grief, his love, his anger with his family, he switches to Russian, which makes sense, right? Because he feels in Russian. That's like the most, you know, common thing for him.
Russian, right?
He feels in Russian. And we can see that in episode 5 when he fights with his brother after his dad dies in the famous, gorgeous tunnel scene.
My God, the monologue. Right, right, right.
Right. Absolutely. But even before, right, like the monologue, but even before the monologue, right? Like when he's on the phone with Shane at the beginning, Shane asks him how he is. And you could see Ilya already struggling with words. I mean, yes, he's upset. Obviously, that thing just happened with his brother. They had a fight. His dad died. When Shane asks him, he's struggling. He goes, not good, probably bad. Like, that's not like the way you would typically answer if you were fluent, you know? Yeah. Right?
But like, even he's actually, it was not typical for even Ilya. It was so broken. I felt like,
well,
he was having a really hard time, you know? Yeah.
He is. He's trying to figure out exactly what to say. He feels it in Russian, so it's like hard for him to do that translation, to do that, you know, mental load to translate right now. It's such a common thing when you have all these feelings in your native tongue, but you just can't get them out. Even now, when I want to say something that I know in Russian, but I want to like translate it into English, you'll hear me say a lot like it just doesn't translate. Mm-hmm. Some feelings don't quite translate.
I
could translate it literally, but it doesn't quite work in English, right? Mm-hmm. And so I love that moment in the tunnel because, again, like Shane finally understands that Ilya needs something else from him, and he gives him the space to speak in Russian because Ilya literally says English is too hard right now. Mm-hmm. Shane tells him to speak in Russian. He won't understand it, but maybe it will help.
Okay. As you say that, I am completely struck by that. I feel like I just thought of it right now, like a lightning bolt. Because I said before that this is the one space where it feels like the power dynamic between Shane and Ilya is really unequal.
Right.
And then Shane is actually flipping the script here. He's giving up some of that power. He's actually kind of putting himself in a position where he's the one who doesn't understand the content of the words. But he understands what it means. He doesn't know exactly what he's saying, but he understands what it means because he closes his eyes. I mean, he's clearly moved by it. It's almost as if the emotion is enough to understand. Sorry, totally interrupted, but I just thought of it as you said it.
You know what? And it's totally cool. I love that. Perhaps this is how we get our light bulbs. You know, like no matter how many times you and I discuss it, I'm always like, oh yeah, like that's such a great point. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like Shane gives up his power, right? Shane offers Ilya a safe space where the immigrant is finally not forced to compress himself for someone else's comfort, right? And we do that often because even though we're immigrants and we have less power in whatever given situation, especially when we're new immigrants, we're still trying to make the other person comfortable with our lack of language just to make sure they can understand us. It's like such a messed up dichotomy. I'm uncomfortable because I don't speak the language, but I don't want you to be uncomfortable and think of me in some other like way.
Yeah, it's a total mind fuck. It's a total mind fuck.
It really is. And finally, Shane gives him this opportunity for emotional truth. Ilya lays it all out, unloads in one of the most gorgeous scenes ever, the Russian monologue. I cannot tell you how many times I have listened to that monologue. At least 20 times. Probably more. Probably more. I have it saved on my phone. I have fallen asleep to it. This is maybe too much. I'm sharing too much. Diana, calm down.
Is there such a thing in this podcast?
No. But listen, here's a flex. I don't need the subtitles. I do not need the subtitles. I can listen to it. I can hear it with my whole chest because I don't need the subtitles. And because I could like listen to it multiple times, I just like close my eyes and listen to it.
Just kind of let the words wash over you. Like Shane.
Like Shane, but I actually understand it. And it's so gorgeous. The way he speaks in Russian, the way he expresses his emotions, his grief, his pain, his love for Shane. He's never able to do that in English, not at first, right? Even when he does tell Shane he loves him in English later, he still hasn't been able to have a conversation with Shane about all the hurt.
Yeah.
And so it's much easier for him to be emotional in the language, in his mother tongue, right?
Right, right, right. I mean, it's called mother tongue for a reason, right? It's supposed to be this place of comfort and ease. But alternatively, he's in Moscow right then, and he's not getting a lot of ease or comfort. He's
right, because he's from Moscow, but he's no longer of Moscow anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He loves Russia, but does Russia love him back? That Russian monologue absolutely, absolutely destroyed me too, even though—
Destroyed.
I did not have the benefit of understanding what was directly said, and I wish I could. But even before that, in episode 5, do you remember that scene with Svetlana where they're talking about the All-Star game? And she's like, I would love to see you on a line with Shane. And she also is like, all right, you know he's talented and hot, okay?
And the entire conversation is in Russian.
Is in Russian. And she says something like, I'd love to see you on a line with him. And Ilya's like, well, we play the same position. How could that even happen? And she's like, well, you could play another position. And he's like, You would have him center me? What does he say?
Minya?
Right. And he kind of jumps on top of her. It looks like two kids like tussling, you know? It's so playful. I don't think we'd ever seen him like that, really.
Right. Because he's comfortable in his native tongue.
Right. Yeah. And so with the monologue, even though I didn't understand it, I get so teary. I still do. Because like you said, he's feeling in Russian, and you can see it. You could feel his entire emotional range change. And all of a sudden, he's like tapping into this vault of depth and feeling. There's something to be said about the ability to communicate authentically in the language you were raised in your
right.
mother tongue.
Yeah.
His face changes. The way he speaks changes. The cadence changes. You know, I've always thought that maybe some of the emotional distance I felt growing up in my parents, especially my mom, was just kind of a combination of growing up differently, growing up in the U.S. versus in India, you know, generational gap, whatever. But I was definitely much more comfortable being expressive in English, even though, again, like I said, I know my mother tongue, native language, Tamil, pretty well. But with this adult lens, finally growing up and just watching my mom interact these days with her friends and just seeing how free and jokey and open and young, you know, young, she seems like talking in her language. I've just always felt like she was so reserved. That's the mom I knew. That hit me really hard in the monologue. Okay, there's a gap in how we were raised and our cultural milieu, etc. But my God, I just think, just like with Ilya, not knowing how to communicate the breadth of your feeling,
right.
It just must make you feel so constricted, like so small.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I could have told you the same story about my mom. I could definitely see that she's so open and sweet and kind and funny when she's speaking Russian, and she's so much more reserved when she's speaking English. Just one last thing about language, and I'll stop, I promise, because I feel like we've been talking about this so long. So in episode 6, there's a part that's supposed to be funny to the audience. It's framed as comedy, right? When they come back to the parents' house, Shane says, I don't want you to find out this way. And Ilya puts his hand on Shane's shoulder and he goes, we're lovers. And we're supposed to laugh, right? And
Shane is like, I have the same reaction as Shane. Like, don't.
Right.
Because
he's like, Shane is immediately like, no, Ilya, no, stop.
No,
like,
no, stop.
And we're meant to laugh because it's funny on the surface, right? In Russian, the word is actually so soft and so intimate and like vulnerable and affectionate. There's no terms for boyfriend and girlfriend. So there's no direct equivalent. So he's trying to say something like, he's my boyfriend. Like my beloved.
Aww.
And the closest translation he has is lovers. But in English, lovers has this icky connotation, sexual, cringy, right? Especially in front of your parents.
Yes.
And he's like, Ilya, my parents are right here. Like, please stop telling him we're fucking, right?
That, like, definitely gives a different lens to that conversation.
Yeah, and so every time Shane says, can we please stop saying lovers when his dad even says it, you know? Mm-hmm. Ilya, if you look at his face, he's genuinely confused. And later, he finally finds the word boyfriend. In his mind, he was probably looking for it forever, you know? Yeah. And Shane is like, my boyfriend? And he goes, really? Boyfriend? And Ilya's like, yeah, I think so, probably.
I thought when Ilya first says it, I honestly thought Ilya was kind of being, like, a little cheeky, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
kind of snarking. He's kind of a snarky guy because he
wore
that Raider shirt to me.
Well, he does do a little bit of rage bait,
right?
No, but right. He's literally no word for boyfriend, girlfriend, nothing like that.
So that's why you think he was puzzled, because there was no translation,
right? Lover is the closest thing he has, so bring that up, because I think that is supposed to be funny, but like, to me, I'm like, yes, it's funny, but like, I also understand why he's using the word.
Okay, we've talked a lot in this episode about Ilya, some about Shane, a lot about ourselves. But I feel like a discussion about heated rivalry and the immigrant experience would be incomplete without talking about Eunice. So Eunice's first-gen Canadian, right? Remind mm-hmm. me again. Yeah.
She was born there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she's the version of the immigrant story that gets the social approval. You know what I mean? She's educated. She's professional. She's fluent in English. She's assimilated, at least externally, right? The word, I think, for that is the model minority.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I also find it interesting because she's at this intersection of both gender and immigration, because she's both a good immigrant and a good woman, right? Like, that's her role. I think for me, that stereotype is very resonating, because I see actually a lot of myself in Eunice. It's like looking in a mirror for me, you know, do everything right, be perfect. So in episode one, do you remember right after Shane films that commercial with Ilya? You know the commercial I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right after the commercial's filmed, it cuts away to Shane and Eunice. And then they're talking about his endorsement. And Eunice says, remember what else this means. For me, I really remember that line. And Shane goes, I remember the way he said it. You know, he's heard this conversation. He's had this conversation before with his mom. And Eunice says, a whole lot of kids will be looking up to you. Kids who don't usually see themselves here, meaning here being professional hockey.
Right.
That scene often in my mind juxtaposed with that coming out scene at David mm-hmm. and Una's cottage. Mm-hmm. Shane has this moment with his mom alone and he apologizes to her for being gay. He says, I tried not to be. And you can see Una is completely gutted by that, right? She says, oh, look at me. And she's like searching for his eyes and says, you have nothing to apologize for. I'm sorry. I made you feel like that. You couldn't tell me. I really don't have words for that scene. I mean, you have the monologue, but from an emotional perspective, this is the scene I think I watch over and over, because I think she realizes, at least this is my interpretation of what happened, that despite all of the love and support she poured into this boy, her baby, something in their relationship kept him from really being honest with her or himself, honestly. Mm-hmm. She's maybe thinking about all the sort of implied messages he's been getting even from her. And that's why mm-hmm. my mind connects that conversation with the, you know, remember who else is watching, who else is looking at you from the beginning. Maybe she's thinking, you know, hey, did I do the right thing, even though I did everything out of love? And as a parent, as a mom, you know, maybe trying to create something that resembles the love and the support Una gives, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also a hard work attitude that she expects.
Yeah.
And that just hits so hard for me. I mean, it just makes you evaluate all of your parenting messaging that you're doing with your kids. What kind of model minority expectations am I putting mm-hmm. on them? What am I carrying forward, even unconsciously?
Right.
And what am I passing on, you know? And that just hits so hard to me. And I love that in that scene, she seems to recognize that by saying, I'm sorry, I made you feel like you couldn't tell me. She takes that. And so that's, see, I'm getting goosebumps. It's just such
a beautiful. So you're
going to
cry. I cried a single time and I thought I would, but now I'm seeing tears in her eyes. This is happening, y'all. Aw, Anusha, I know.
That's a beautiful scene.
You know what? Like, as children of immigrants, you know, immigrants ourselves, but also obviously we were young. So we really are like children of immigrants as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like there is this idea that like you do not disappoint your parents. Mm-hmm. They have made all of these sacrifices. Most people don't even understand, unless you're an immigrant yourself, just how many sacrifices immigrant parents make for their children. So when the children are growing up, there is added pressure of, you cannot disappoint your parents because they have made the ultimate sacrifice. And whether we realize it or not, we probably are putting some of that immigrant parent pressure on our kids. Now, that's a good point, Anusha. I like that you brought that up. I think we definitely, you know, the idea of this model minority here definitely plays a part.
Yeah, 100%.
We're approaching the end of our show, so you know what that means, Diana. It's our moment of sunshine. I hope you're ready with yours.
I'm so excited. Let's go.
So my moment of sunshine is actually something that happened a few weeks ago. So am I allowed? I'm allowed. I'm gonna change the rules a little bit. We're lawless people here. So this actually happened as we were editing episode one. In the middle of editing episode one, I went to a protest in our little town that is actually very relevant to the title of this episode. I came home and my babies were just sort of like milling around me, setting up their own podcast. My husband was helping me edit episode one, and it just made me so happy. And I remember sharing that in our text with some other friends. And one of our friends said, even in turbulent times, there is music and art and love. And I mean, I'm not elevating this podcast to art, but it's certainly done with a lot of love. It's a labor of love in so many ways. So yeah, I felt all of that at that moment. So that was my sunshine. How about you?
My moment of sunshine is anticipatory.
Oh, so you're changing the rules too. All right.
Well, like we said, we have no rules.
No rules.
And so this Saturday, I am going to a heated rivalry rave.
What?
A dance party? I don't know.
Oh my God.
I should be sleeping at 9 p.m. because I'm a grown woman. Yeah, I'm a grown woman with kids and family and, you know, all this stuff. But it doesn't matter because I am going to the Heated Rivalry dance party with one of my girlfriends, and I'm spending the night in the city, and I'm just going to have the best time. I just know it. I'm so excited.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be like all the things you said, both versions playing over and over, and you get to have like
that's
a moment.
Fine by me.
So
that's
that sounds like
me.
The dream. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Next week on Everyone Deserves Sunshine, we're talking about neurodivergence.
Okay, we're just talking about all the big topics head on, I guess. And perhaps a little more Shane-centric, that episode will be.
Right.
I don't know why I said it like Yoda, but...
because this is the immigrant episode and our English has left the building.
Anyway, I can't wait to hash it all out with you, Diana, and with our listeners.
Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you want to say hi to the girls in the crease, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at Everyone Deserves Sunshine.
You could email us at everyonedeservessunshine@gmail.com. New episodes drop on Mondays.
See you then.